82. Lydia. Coming here had been folly. Lydia used what remained of daylight to finish wrapping a bandage around the woman's shoulder, then helped her lean back against the side of the overturned boat. That she'd been the only one injured was pure luck. Luck, and Killian being his lunatic self, jumping out of the boat the way he had. Her heart had been in her throat the entire time, certain he'd be shot. Or if not shot, then left behind by the boat because of a surety Agrippa would have abandoned him. Then the cell devil himself was kneeling next to her, holding out a small pouch.
Have her chew on a pinch of this, and it will help her sleep through the pain. We won't be going anywhere until dawn.
What is it?
My own special concoction,
he replied.
She'll sleep like the dead, trust me.
Not a chance. But the injured woman held out a pleading hand, so Lydia grudgingly gave her a pinch of the green leaves, watching as Agrippa rejoined Killian and Baird to fell trees. The location they'd chosen for the camp was unremarkable as far as she could tell. The ground was packed down dirt and rock covered with fresh snow, but in a perimeter around the camp were built up piles of charred wood. What sort of creatures prowled these mountains that a group this size needed to surround itself with fire? That the wild men, who appeared nothing short of fearless to her eyes, went to ground every night in order to avoid? An answer to be had soon enough, as the shadows stretched longer, the women joining the men in helping to drag the felled trees inside the perimeter.
Not these,
she heard Agrippa say to one of the women, tossing a nettled branch back into the woods.
The smoke is toxic. Puts you to sleep right quick. Here, drag this one over to Baird instead.
Baird methodically chopped the trees into firewood, which Agrippa then used to create equally spaced fires until the group was surrounded by roaring flames. The heat, at least, was welcome, her clothing soaked from being endlessly splashed by the rapids. Retrieving a large pot from the pile of supplies, she stepped between fires, going to the edge of the river to fill it. She also took the time to rinse the blood from her gloves, the water like ice against her skin.
You all right?
Killian knelt on the rocks next to her, dipping a hand into the river and using the water to wash the sweat from his face. Yes. Sitting back on her haunches, she dried her hands on her skirts. You need to quit showing off, though. Normal people can't do that sort of thing, and eventually they are going to start questioning why you can. He frowned, scratching at his beard.
I wasn't showing off. I was saving our asses.
Next time, do it with less flair. Her tone was more cutting than she intended. But instead of snapping back at her, Killian caught her arm.
What's wrong?
I killed a woman. Her chin trembled because every time she blinked, she saw the corrupted tender's life fading into nothingness. Nothing beyond the obvious. I'm fine. A whistle cut the air, and she glanced over her shoulder to see Agrippa motioning them back. Climbing to her feet, she reached down to pick up the heavy pot of water, but Killian picked it up first and carried it back to the cook fire.
No more venturing out,
Agrippa warned the group.
Not for any reason. You're going to hear all sorts of strange things tonight, but no matter what it is you think you hear, don't step outside the perimeter unless you want to end up in a stomach.
The little girl started to cry, and Lydia was surprised to see a look of guilt flash over Agrippa's face.
You're safe within camp, little one,
he said. Then to her mother,
stuff her ears with scraps of fabric. Stuff your own if you can't handle the noise.
With the ease of much practice, they continued setting up the camp, using a large piece of canvas fixed to the edge of the boat to create a tent of sorts. Killian was relegated to cooking once again, though she noted he kept a watchful eye on the trees, his expression telling her that his mark was warning him of danger. The group had only just finished dinner when the last glows of the sun set, plunging the mountains into darkness. No one spoke. The only sound, the rushing of the river and the crackle of flames. and Lydia held her hands up to the fire as the temperature dropped. Then she heard it. Only faintly at first. The sound, barely audible over the fire. Crying.
"I hear something,"
one of the women said.
"Crying! There's someone out there!"
"Not someone,"
Agrippa clarified, poking at the fire.
"Something. And I told you before you paid me what to expect from these creatures. Just ignore them."
"Help! Help!"
A child's voice cut the air, full of terror, and Lydia clambered to her feet, searching the surrounding trees for motion. But she could see nothing but darkness.
"Try something new, you bastards!"
Agrippa shouted.
"I've heard this one before."
Lydia ignored him, walking slowly to the perimeter, allowing her vision to go out of focus so that she could see the life of whatever was out there. Then hands closed over her shoulders, drawing her back.
"Don't listen,"
Killian said, his breath warm against her ear.
"It's a trick to lure you out."
"I know." She resisted the urge to lean back against him. But she trailed off, her eyes latching on a small, glowing form, huddled perhaps a dozen paces away.
"Help me,"
it whimpered.
"I'm scared. There's a child out there. I can see it."
She tried to pull out of Killian's grip, but he hauled her back, arm around her waist.
"Gertrude, it's not a child."
Agrippa had come up next to them. "Then what is it?" she demanded. "What sort of creature can speak with a child's voice like that?"
"I suppose being from Mutamora, you wouldn't know of them."
He exhaled a long breath.
"We don't know what they are exactly. They're called mimics because there isn't a sound or voice they can't replicate. Whatever they are, they have an uncanny ability to choose just the right thing to set people off. I've lost more travelers to their tricks than to the wild men."
"Have you seen them?"
Killian asked, still holding her tight, his heart throbbing steadily against her back.
"Yeah."
Reaching down, Agrippa picked up a burning stick.
"Let's see if we can get a look at this one."
He cocked his head, listening to the sound of the child crying, then threw the branch. Lydia held her breath as the flames flew end over end before striking a tree. An enraged shriek cut the air, and for a second, Lydia saw it. White fur and claws and a mouth full of needle-sharp teeth, and then the flames flickered out.
"Gods,"
one of the men whispered from behind them.
"I've never seen anything like it." "Nor I,"
Agrippa said.
"Lern must have been in a foul mood the day he made these beasts, if he can be credited with creating them at all."
All around her, the travelers made the sign of the six against their chests, and as she did the same, Lydia was again struck that these people were not at all what she'd expected. Killian drew her backward toward the cook fire, and Lydia felt a stab of disappointment when he let go of her, her back growing swiftly cold away from the press of his chest. The family had followed Agrippa's advice and wrapped fabric over the ears of the children to muffle the mimic's voices, the four of them already readying to fall asleep inside the makeshift tent. The other travelers were wrapping themselves in blankets and joining them, the space tight enough to be unappealing. Going to her pack, Lydia unfastened her bedroll, grimacing at the dampness of everything. It was going to be a cold night.
"I'll take first watch,"
Agrippa said to Killian.
"Then Baird. Then you. Try to get some sleep. Tomorrow will be far worse."
The giant was already snoring loudly next to the fire, clearly unconcerned by the mimic, which had returned to the trees around camp, whispering and crying in a child's voice, although it was easier to ignore it now that she'd seen it. Killian was unrolling his own blankets next to the fire. He looked up right as she looked at him, and her face warmed as she considered just exactly how to manage the sleeping arrangements given the story they'd told Agrippa. As if hearing her thoughts, the cell legionnaire said,
"Don't hold back on my account. I've seen it all at this point."
Killian scowled at him, but Agrippa only laughed and pulled a blanket over his shoulders, eyes roving the trees beyond the fires. Biting her lip, Lydia laid out her bedroll between Killian's and the fire, rolling up her cloak to serve as her pillow. Lying on her side, she pulled her blanket up to her chin and watched the snowflakes fall into the flames, acutely aware of Killian moving behind her, of him rolling up his own cloak, then lying down, close but not touching her. Then the loud screech of a Deimos split the night. Lydia jerked upright, turning to see Killian already had his sword in hand, his eyes skyward.
"Mimic," Agrippa murmured. "Too cold for the Deimos."
Lying back down, Lydia curled in on herself, trying to calm the racing of her heart. But it was impossible to relax with the mimic imitating the Deimos' screams, the pounding of wings. Not with open sky over her. A cold wind blew down the slope, piercing through her blanket, and she shivered, clenching her teeth. Then Killian's arm slipped around her waist. His hand pressed against her abdomen. He pulled her back against him. Instantly, her body went as stiff as a board, fear fleeing as her mind fixated on each place they were touching. Her shoulder blades against the hard muscle of his chest, her bottom against the flat planes of his stomach, the heels of her boots against his shins. She could feel the heat of his breath against her hair, and instinct caused her to lift her head so his other arm could slide beneath her neck. It was not lost on her that this was the position she'd dreamed of finding herself in, night after night, when she'd slept alone in her room in the temple. Fantasies of being wrapped in his arms, except it had never stopped at just that. And part of her was afraid to relax, lest her body betray her with desire for what she couldn't have.
"Try to sleep."
His voice was low, something in the tone of it causing heat to flood into her belly and her chest to ache.
"I'll watch your back."
His fingers interlocked with hers.
"So will the six."
And though the thought of sleeping seemed impossible with the mimics screaming and her nerves thrumming, eventually, exhaustion took hold of her, and she slipped into darkness.
"You were the last person I expected this from."
A cool, polished voice filled her ears, and Lydia's heart leapt into a gallop, her skin turning to ice as she recognized the voice of her would-be murderer.
"How can you live with yourself? You betrayed your brothers. You betrayed me."
Her eyes snapped open, moving from the fire before her to search her surroundings. Killian still held her close, his slow, measured breath telling her he was asleep and unaware of the danger.
"You deserted us." "No, I didn't."
It was Agrippa who'd spoken, responding to the accusation in cell, and realization dawned on her that it wasn't Marcus she was hearing, but one of the mimics. Except how was that possible? How could the creature replicate the voice of a young man it had never crossed paths with, speak a language it had surely never heard? How did it know which voice would cut a person to the core?
"Didn't you?"
Marcus's voice was bitter.
"How long has it been since you tried to find a way back?" "There is no way back. I searched. You gave up. You're a deserter." "I'm not."
Agrippa's voice was hollow, and her eyes finally found him, pacing around the perimeter of camp, his hands balled into fists.
"You are. And when we find you, 2483, we'll make you bleed for it."
She heard Agrippa's breath catch, saw the way he was looking to the opposite side of the fire with what looked far too much like intent. And as much as she longed to see this young man dead, Killian was right. They needed him. Drawing his weapon, he took another step toward the fire.
DeSisto!
The word tore from her lips, and she silently cursed her error as his shoulders went rigid. Slowly, he turned to stare at her.
Shit.
Killian stirred, and as she sat up, he opened his eyes.
What's wrong?
Nothing. Or possibly everything. Go back to sleep. He watched her for a few seconds, then tightened his grip on her hand and closed his eyes. A few minutes later, his breathing deepened.
Interesting choice of language,
Agrippa said quietly, his eyes fixed on her face.
Other than the Marin, I thought I was the only one on this half of Reef who could speak it.
Because there was no way to backtrack on her error, she said in Cell, did you really believe you were the only one to accidentally cross the world? Silence. Then, his voice ragged, Agrippa asked,
do you know a way back?
No, I don't. His shoulders slumped.
Doesn't really matter at this point. I can never go back.
With all the things Agrippa knew about the West, him going back to the Empire would be catastrophic. But curiosity still demanded, she ask. Why not?
Because they'll execute me as a deserter.
But you said you didn't leave by choice, she pressed. Surely once you explain the circumstances, they'll understand.
That the Zenthier took me to the far side of the world? To a place that doesn't even exist in their minds?
He snorted.
Thanks to some choices I made about a girl prior to my unplanned departure, no one in my legion would believe me, most especially not my friends. I'd be dead long before anyone would corroborate my claim.
You might be surprised, Lydia thought. The Senate does not execute individuals without trial.
The Senate doesn't execute deserters. The legions do.
But Agrippa held up a hand to forestall her.
I know what the law is, Gertrude, but I also know what actually happens when a deserter gets caught. I've seen it.
Sheathing his weapon, he came back over to the fire, taking a seat.
It's an unwritten rule that if we catch a deserter, we bypass official channels and return him to his legion for justice. And I assure you, there is no trial. And the execution isn't the hanging, either. The deserter gets beaten to death by his brothers.
Lydia pressed a hand to her mouth, horrified by the visual. Logically, she knew that legion training fostered violence, but she'd been raised to believe their obedience to the Empire was unquestionable. This smacked of something entirely different.
You're a civilian,
he said.
No one outside the legions understands. Desertion is the absolute worst thing you can do. Worse than even murdering one of your brothers, which happens a lot more than desertion, in case you were wondering.
Why? She demanded. Surely they, more than anyone, could understand why someone might choose a different life. He made a face.
Because it makes those left behind feel weaker, and no one likes that, especially given the things we face.
Scrubbing a hand through his hair, he added,
the reason the legions do what they do so well is that we rarely fight as individuals. So it's not only your own strength bolstering your nerve, but the strength of the men to either side of you and your certainty that they'll hold their ground. Having a man desert is like having a man abandon the line and leaving your flank undefended. It rattles your certainty that the man on the other side of you won't do the same, leaving you all alone. It's terrible for morale, and catching the deserter and killing him is like cutting out the weakness.
He was right. She didn't understand. Refused to understand how boys raised to be like brothers could kill one another because one decided they didn't want to kill at all.
As though reading her thoughts, Agrippa said, I can tell you don't get it. So you'll just have to believe me when I say it's true. And by the time a deserter is caught, they are so vilified that nothing they say matters. Guilt has already been decided. We were with the 29th when they got a hold of one of their deserters. What was left of him wouldn't have filled a jar. After nearly 4 years of me being gone, the 37th would do the same to me in a heartbeat.
Though she'd known that must be his legion, hearing it from his lips still made her shiver, especially given the legion's relative proximity.
No one escapes the Empire's net.
Marcus's voice filtered across the fiery perimeter of the camp.
Nowhere on Wreath is beyond our reach.
Oh, shut up,
Agrippa snapped.
Choose someone different.
The mimic fell silent, and Lydia asked, if you could go back, if they'd accept your story, would you?
I don't know.
Rising to his feet, he moved to add more wood to the perimeter, then came back to sit across from her.
Most of my life, I've been doing what I've been told because the alternative is death. By noose, by Rufina's mark. If I had a choice, it might be to walk a different path.
You've always had a choice, Agrippa.
A young woman's voice filled the air, speaking in cell but with a heavy Bardenese accent.
And you've always chosen to be the villain.
As Lydia watched, Agrippa's face twisted with grief, and he reached up to press his hands against his ears.
Go to sleep, Gertrude,
he said.
She's going to berate me for the rest of the night.
Lying back down, she curled up against Killian's warmth. He stirred, pulling her closer.
Sleep, love.
Her heart caught in her throat. But instead of heeding him, she lay awake for a long time, listening to the mimic whisper in the Bardenese woman's voice. The last thing she remembered before falling asleep were tears trickling down Agrippa's face.